Blog Hello all, welcome and light. You are listening to Awakenings Radio, and I am Michelle Mache, your host, or as I like to say, your co-pilot. And I also want to welcome all that are listening to the live stream at Cosmic Dimensions as well, and those of you that will be listening to the archives later and via iTunes. It's a wonderful Wednesday. It's got a full moon in Gemini, so I'm hoping everyone is feeling very aligned and awake to the energies that are present with us right now. Those of you that might be listening to Awakenings for the first time, Awakenings Radio highlights conscious living for conscious lives. Awakenings is the place for awakening conversations with artists, musicians, metaphysicians, spiritually minded people, and progressive thinkers in their own fields that are waking up or are awake and taking this awakened state into their everyday living. We host dialogues and interviews with teachers and conscious experts, visionaries, all matter of bridging science and spirituality. And Awakenings is also the place for a timely relaying of essential information, insights, inspiration, and tools for transformation and spiritual unfoldment. And Awakenings is a live, interactive program. So we love your calls, your questions. And in fact, I've gotten a few already via email that we'll be getting to with our guest. And if you are in the chat room and you're listening as a guest, that is absolutely perfect. If you would like to interact a little more, engage a little more in the chat room, and perhaps post your comments or questions, all you need to do is register with BTR, Blog Talk Radio, and it's very simple. In fact, I think if you click on that you want to type, it will ask you to either sign in or register, and it's just your name and email. And if you would like to call in with your questions or comments for our guest or in general, the number is 347-539-5122. And also what helps me on the switchboard is if you're, do you have a question or a comment, if you just press the number 1 on your keypad, and I will get an indication on the switchboard that you have a question, because we do have a few people that are listening via phone today. I got a couple of emails saying, don't pick up the phone. A couple people, one listening in the office, and another one is listening while they're driving their child to school. So, not a big deal. Sometimes I've picked up anyway when people are in the office, and then I get the whisper, I'm in the office. I can't talk now. So I want to be respectful, and I do appreciate the emails. We have quite a community here. In fact, our chat room has been renamed the Sacred Space of Empowerment. So I think that speaks volumes to the energy and the intention that all of you are co-creating and holding the space for here. So a lot of wonderful transformative energies always, but even more at this time as we are in a new gateway, portal of light, another one. So a lot of focus on activation and acceleration. So I'd love to hear your thoughts and your experiences on this. I do know with people that I've been speaking with around the globe that the theme seems to be, or the weaving of the theme is, there's so much to do, not enough time, so much is happening, it's all happening now, it's all coming together, I'm being guided in a new direction, I don't know where I'm going, but I see I'm being guided, I'm getting confirmations, things seem to be speeding up, my interests that I had before I no longer have. There's new interests. So if that, you know, let us know if you are feeling this as well. I know where there's 10, 20, or 100 people feeling this, that there are literally thousands. And I would say the people that I've been speaking with have been probably in the hundreds, so you can definitely see that there have been there is a mass shift that is occurring, which has been occurring, the cycle of awakening or awakenings. But we are getting into some perhaps finer points, if you will, or more individuated experiences of the shift and how people are responding. And one of the things that I am hearing and seeing, and I would like to share with you, and when our guest comes on the air, get also her take on it, is that if you are following those openings or getting the assistance to be able to follow the openings or read the openings or know that there's an opening or understand the message that you're receiving to make the shift, the change, or go in the new direction. So that is also really important. And we're all here to support each other and share our insight, our inspiration, our understanding of the path. That's a lot of what Awakenings is about. What are we, you know, each guest, each listener, participant, you know, how are you answering the call? And what are your tools, your modes? What's working for you? What's not working? And just how your life experience is unfolding with your succession of awakenings, and again, how are you living this awakened state? I think that's the key. I call it moving from self-realization to self-actualization. Used to be there was a lot of focus on being self-realized, and one of my teachers used to say, "Well, that's sitting in a lotus position, staring at your navel." Okay, good. Now what are you going to do with it? You know, what are you going to do? How are you going to live? And in fact, actually, our guest, I do want her to touch on this as well, because she does have a wonderful story of her awakening and going into the path that she is presently on. So I'd love to bring her on now. We have with us, which... a personal tickle for me, and because I have been faithfully reading, rereading, using, contemplating our guest, the Crystal Ally cards, the Crystal Path to Self-Knowledge, for many, many years, and use it in my practice as well. It's a wonderful resource, and not just the book and the images, but the energy. You can feel the energy through the words, the alignment through the words and through the card. So I feel really blessed that we have her on the program. Today we do have on Awakenings Naisha Azian, and she is the author, like I was mentioning, of the Crystal Ally Cards. She's also co-author of the New Leaf best-selling book, The Book of Stones, which she co-authored with Robert Simmons. And she also has a new book and program out called Infinite Abundance Program. She also founded and heads up the Chrysalis Institute, which focuses on how crystals work and vibrational healing. I want to welcome to the program Naisha. Hi, Naisha.
Hi, Michelle. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, I am tickled.
Great. Well, so am I. Really, I know we're going to have fun.
Yeah, it's going to be great. And you know what's interesting, because I know you're very busy and you're very focused, it seems like, just from what I've been able to gather from that particular book and then online. And we had a little trouble getting in touch with you. And then, lo and behold, what brought us together was Twitter.
Twitter, yay. We're both
tweeters. Yeah, the tweeters. I saw, you had direct messaged me, and I went, oh, I know that name. Kennedy? Went to your profile page. There she is. Oh, my God. It's a sign.
Yeah, and so, it's amazing today with, you know, Twitter and Facebook and the social networking pages. It is such a blessing because I have the opportunity to connect with so many more people on a personal level than you could ever do, you know, in the old days, you know, 5 years ago. So it is really wonderful to be able to use those mediums to connect with people and get to know them and also to get your message out, which is really important. We have a lot to do in a short period of time now.
Oh, and I'm so glad you say that. Another confirmation. It is a short, we are in this quickening and a little behind time schedule. We've got to get, you know, got to get the messages and the tools out, which, and it's interesting you said just 5 years ago. So I think if even, I want to get your take on this. I like to always, you know, even though very, you know, metaphysical and with the channeling and such, as you, but don't you find that common sense, it plays out, you know, even if, like, your statement of saying 5 years ago, even by common sense, if we just observed with the, you know, rational mind or logic mind, you can just see, wow, life has really changed.
Yeah.
It's not, right? I mean, just like what you said, 5 years ago, we wouldn't be connecting in this way.
Right. It has really changed. And one of the things that's been fascinating to me is, well, the whole Mayan calendar, because, of course, everybody's just catastrophobic about 2012, and there's so much misinformation out there. But if you really understand the Mayan calendar, you really come to understand that each one of the cycles represented there is an acceleration cycle. And we've just now, November 8th, entered the sixth night of the galactic underworld, and that is yet another acceleration for the next year. And so it's only going to get faster and faster.
Yes.
And this is why we have to kind of learn to surf these energies and not fight them or resist them, because then you lose the plot and get really stressed out, which is exactly what we need to not do during this time.
Yeah. I love what you say, too, lose the plot. And I keep, you know, and I will get people calling and saying, when is this going to be over? And I said, oh, no. Like you say, start learning to surf, because, it's only going to get, you know, more and more and more. You know, and also, to me, but it's also representing our multidimensional existence and our simultaneous existence. I think it's just people, they're getting that constructed ego to retrain it, you know, to be able to embrace this or be with this, you know.
Right. And I see it as a transition from linear living, which has been the model for the past, you know, however long we've had recorded history, has been linear living, to a model of spherical living, which is kind of where you're in the center of the spider web with all of these different strands going in different directions, and you have to kind of maintain equal tension on all the strands at all times. And by kind of spherically living that way, you come into a place of dynamic balance. Whereas if you try to live linearly, just with one of those strands with the proper tension on it, the rest of the web falls apart. And that's really becoming more and more apparent as we move through these cycles. So, yeah, that's it's a big one.
Now you mentioned, which I agree, the surfing, you know, the energies. You mentioned otherwise you'll get really stressed out. Can you talk about that a little bit or touch upon that?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a big part of the work that I do that is not really about crystals per se, but is instead about this whole juncture that we're at as a human species, this juncture of actual literal physical evolution in response to light energy. And part of that has to do with understanding the two primary pathways of how we process light, and that those are the two primary aspects of the nervous system, the sympathetic and parasympathetic. And the sympathetic nervous system is your fight or flight, stress-based part of your nervous system. And when you're in that part of your nervous system, your body cannot heal and repair. You have a difficult time expanding consciously. You have a difficult time thinking creatively in order to come up with new ways of being. And unfortunately, we really are trained to use stress as a motivator to get things done. And the problem with that is it actually impairs our ability to get things done. Now, the other pathway is the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the healing and repair nervous system of the body. And when you're in that nervous system,
system, you are able to come up with creative new approaches and creative new ideas to work harmoniously and cooperatively with others, to expand consciously and spiritually. And also, literally, that part of your nervous system signals your body to go into healing and repair on a physical level. So we're really at a crossroad within our own physiology right now. And stress is something that we must evolve beyond right now, because we simply will not be able to make it through this shift if we continue to use that fight or flight stress-based nervous system as our governing principle.
Yeah, I so agree. You know, as you're speaking, it reminds me of, if people don't start integrating, it's almost like you're torn apart, because you just can't, that old model can't hold the vibrational frequency of the impulsion of light, the light that's coming through. It just can't hold it. And yet, you're right, everything that we've been taught has been to reinforce the other, the smaller part of our awareness or being. You know, it almost reminds me of, you know, having a small little 8-ounce cup, and now, you know, someone coming with this, you know, 200-gallon jug and saying, we're going to pour all of that into there now.
Right, right. Yeah, that doesn't work very well. And the other thing, too, that is so important to understand is that when you're in stress, you're in resistance. That's literally what stress is resistance to what's happening. It's an attempt to flee what's happening. And this is where everybody's going, when is it going to go back to the way it was? When are we going to go back to when things were slower and things were easier and, you know, the economy was fabulous and we had no problems? And, well, we're not going to go back there. We're going to evolve into a new place where we have adapted to create an even more positive future. But that idea of wanting to go back to the past is a stress physiology concept. And when you talk about the ego is actually a function of the sympathetic nervous system. It's the processing consciousness that judges everything and says, you know, is this going to kill me and eat me and therefore I should run away from it? Or am I going to kill it and eat it? In other words, attack it and conquer it. And whereas spiritual consciousness, which is what we need to move into, is a function of the parasympathetic nervous system. And its thought process is very, very different. It is not a process of judgment. It's a process of assessment, a process of discernment, and understanding we have so many different directions to go in. And this is what you were saying earlier in the intro, and something that everybody that I work with says as well. You know, there's so many things to do, so many directions that I'm being asked to go in. How can I do that? Well, you can't do it linearly. You can't do it from ego, and you can't do it from stress. You have to shift, you know, your body first and your mind, and then you can live spherically and allow your creative consciousness, your heart consciousness, to take over.
And see, that's the key, I think. That's a really good point, that living spherically or the living, you know, vertically, is that if you are living more out of that template of the constructed ego, then things get done, you know, out of the, like you said earlier, the linear time path. I think that's part of, I'm not sure about you, but that's what I'm seeing a lot of people having challenges with. They keep saying, I don't have the time. I don't have, or how am I going to rise to time? And it's like, because you can't, why do you find when we're moving, you know, time is changing, our concept of time or how time is, you know, experienced. And if you are living spherically, like you're saying, you can't focus on the linear time.
Right. Yeah, you can't. And that concept of time is changing. It is. And also our perception of time is changing for very physiological reasons. I mean, well, if I can go into this for a moment, I think it's a really important concept. A lot of people understand that the magnetic field of the Earth is decreasing. And that is, you know, a natural cycle in the Earth's growth process. It's nothing new for the Earth, but it is unusual that humans are on the Earth when we get to this very low magnetic point. What that does is it weakens our protection from high frequency light coming in from space, literally from the sun and from space. So we're getting more X-rays, gamma radiation, and high frequency energy. Our nervous system is constructed to process frequency, electromagnetic energy. It's what it does. We're electromagnetic creatures. We literally are light beings. And with this increase of light coming in from outer space, it literally stimulates our nervous system and our brains to the point where our brain is having to work much, much harder to process all of this information. And it is information. Every single photon is capable of carrying 3 gigabytes of information. So when you think you're being, you know, bombarded by trillions of photons every moment, that's a huge amount of electrical impulses and information for your nervous system to process. So this is where the idea of focus becomes so important. Mm-hmm. We need to ground, first of all. The old paradigm was climb out the top of your head and get high, and it had to be that way because we had such high magnetics on the planet. If you were going to move your frequency even a little bit, you had to have huge discipline, meditate constantly, live in a temple, you know, and climb out the top of your head. Now people are popping over, you know, popping open all over. It's there's no longer that struggle to open.
Yeah.
Right. But we're doing it with no discipline, and we're doing it with no grounding. And when you were talking about needing to act and not just, you know, contemplate your navel, that is absolutely true. The energy flow shifted, and now it's about bringing it down here and doing something with it in the world, not using spirituality as a spaceship to get off the planet. So there.
I love that. And I love that you're saying that about the acting, doing something, and the focus, and also the grounding. And also, to me, you touched on something so, oh my God, importante, very important. The discipline, the grounding, because so many are just opening. Kind of, you know, there's been, a shift, as well as people, you know, working with teachers or getting, you know, getting things passed on kind of from, you know, lip to ear. I'm seeing people are just so open, blown open, and they're like, woo, now, you know, they're like floating, and there is no, discipline or grounding to really anchor the energies. And that can be quite challenging, you know, either I'm seeing people either escape, kind of escapism, like you were speaking of, kind of, you know, let me just meditation zoom out of this, or not able to do anything. And maybe you can talk about that. Does that have to do anything, do you think, with the focusing?
Yeah. Either one of those? It does. It has a lot to do not only with focusing. I mean, let's talk first about grounding, just what the concept of grounding is. Many people who are opening spiritually do not find grounding to be a sexy concept at all. Probably 9/10 of the people that I interact with who are working on their spiritual expansion are really trying to get as high as possible and actually kind of eschew the concept of grounding as, you know, well, who wants to be here? Who wants to be in a body? Who wants to be on the planet? We need to all ascend and, you know, move out our crown chakras into the wide ethers. The problem with that, and there are several, the first one, on a physiological level, the process of grounding literally grounds your electromagnetic field, which is your aura, and brings it into resonance with the Earth's electromagnetic field, which is the Earth's aura. So as the Earth is going through its shifts right now, and us being on the Earth, if you are not connected to the Earth's electromagnetic field, there will come a point where the Earth's energy shift is such that you are not going to be able to follow it. And that's going to cause a lot of physiological problems. There was actually a movie, a silly movie. I have a 21-year-old daughter, and she was a bit younger at that time. She made me watch it. It was called The Core, and it came out several years ago. And the opening scene of this movie is, people in boardrooms dropping dead of heart attacks and migrating animals going in all different directions. And the idea of the movie was that the core of the Earth had been upset and the magnetic field is disappearing. And that is very true. And one of the side effects of that is weakening heart energy, literally physical hearts becoming weaker as we get more stressed. And so when you're grounded, you're in resonance with the Earth's electromagnetic field, which strengthens your heart. And when your heart is strengthened, your physiology is strengthened and your spirituality is strengthened. So that's number one. Number two, when people are working so hard on their upper chakras and not focusing on their lower chakras, they become very ineffective in their lives. It's very hard to manifest anything, to support your own needs, to get projects completed. And this is this is not our task here. Our task is to bring consciousness to the world to facilitate others as we're facilitating ourselves through this shift. And we can't do that if we're ineffective. Essentially, if you're using spirituality as an escape, you might as well be sticking a needle in your arm or dropping acid, because you're not any good to anyone.
Exactly.
You know, we need to be bringing this energy down here, grounding it into the world, and sharing it with others through our creations. And grounding is the only way to do that.
I love the energy of what you're saying. I think when we look through the lens of the old paradigm of the more conventional or fundamental religions, you know, Judeo-Christian, mm-hmm. I think that's where this escaping kind of came from. You know, it's like be everywhere but here, you know. And again, I want to go back to common sense. Then why are we here?
Right.
Who would create a game some people believe this game. I do not. That you create a game that you incarnate to be here in form to escape, to get out.
Right.
Right. So I
mean,
it's like...
Right.
But you,
and,
you know,
yeah.
I was trying to figure that one out. I'm like, okay, who...
Well, another way that I look at it, Michelle, just on a really functional level is, you know, when your house gets dirty, you don't move out of your house and move into another one. You take a couple of hours, however much you may begrudge it, and you clean your house. And what I see with a lot of the spiritual escapism is the idea of, oh, well, the earth is a wreck. We're just going to ascend to a new earth and leave this one behind. And all the poor souls who aren't evolved enough, and this is typical old Judeo-Christian hierarchical thinking, you know, the good ones are going to go on to a greater reward and the bad ones, poor dears, are going to be damned to eternal hell. Well, that's exactly what a lot of the ascension stuff out there is basically saying, is that those who are evolved enough are going to go to the new earth where everything's going to be shiny and clean and new, and everyone who, you know, isn't able to make that shift is going to get stuck here. And that, to me, is just feels terribly irresponsible. And I want to just say, I did that for years. You know, I did the whole climb out the top of your head, escape the earth, don't be in your body, it's better to be high than to be grounded, all of that. So what I'm saying is not coming from a place of you're wrong and I'm right. It's coming from a place of I took that as far as humanly possible and realized it doesn't work, you know, that once we ground and once we start bringing our energy down here and placing it into action and sharing spiritual information, knowledge, or just energy with others, that's how we get to shift the earth. You know, not just by this kind of black hole mentality of, well, I'm going to get my energy as high as possible and take off. So, yes, I absolutely agree with you. I don't think that we were kind of stuck down here, born into prison, in order to grow up enough to learn how to escape. That just doesn't make sense in the concept of a loving divine being.
Mm-mm.
So, I'm there.
I would
agree. And it is kind of it's kind of epidemic out there, unfortunately.
Yeah, it is. It is. I know. Don't worry. You know, we're going to go anyway. And I'm going. And my understanding metaphysically is that the ascending is simply moving out of living from a duality so that you don't have that push-pull, which means you're going to be right where you are. It's just it's a consciousness, a shift in consciousness where there's no, you know, wrong or right, or, you know, that person's evil and that's good. You know, you're able to, you know, be in that place. I just think a lot of people are going to be very surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's going to be a lot of surprises there. I do want to get. We do have a couple questions, and I am going to get to those. I'm going to put those on hold a little bit, but I'd love if you wouldn't mind touching upon your one of your awakenings, and maybe the main one, how you. It came to working with crystals, connecting with the crystals, and then also authoring, channeling the Crystal Ally cards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there are quite a few experiences that I went to, and I think that I'll just start by saying all of the work that I've done has come from my journey to heal myself. I grew up in a family that was, you know, alcoholic, sexually abusive, physically abusive, emotionally abusive, destitute, poor, and really just not a very loving, supportive place. And I spent years, you know, abusing myself, essentially, all through my teen years as a process of coming out of that place of victimization. And what I came to was understanding I either needed to heal myself or kill myself. Those were the options. And after being unsuccessful at trying to kill myself a couple of times, I decided healing myself might be a better option. So at that point, I was, I started massage school when I was 18. And that was a huge step for me because, of course, coming out of abusive situation, being touched and touching others and learning those boundaries and what's okay and what's not, what's appropriate, what's not, and even just the idea that touch can be healing was something that was really new to me. So that was really where my world began to shift. And during that time, I actually received my first crystal healing. I had been working with crystals for many, many years. Literally as a child, I would go down to the river and pick up rocks and stones and crystals and sit with them, talk to them, and interact with them. It was a great way to escape the house, and rocks were great listeners, you know.
Yes.
But I didn't have any formal training in working with them. It was really completely intuitive on my part. And when I received my first crystal healing, I was laying on the table of the practitioner, and the practitioner put a bunch of stones on my body and did a little bit of energy work, probably Reiki, and then said, okay, I'm going to leave the room and just let the stones do their work, and I'll be back in a little while. And I said, okay. Not ever having had, you know, a healing like this before, I didn't really understand how out of alignment the concept of leaving your client alone is when
right,
you're
right.
there to facilitate them, but
that's
okay.
Right.
So she left me alone and left the room, and I was laying there on the table kind of disappointed, quite honestly. I wasn't feeling anything. I wasn't noticing anything, you know, shifting. Wasn't having any huge realizations. And I said, you know what, I'm just going to lay here and let it be. I'm already here. I might as well just relax. And just kind of did that, relaxed and did a little conscious breathing. And instantly, I mean, within an instant, went from, you know, light to dark in the sense of the top of my head, my crown, opened,
mm-hmm.
just like mm-hmm. looking at airplane hangar doors opening, you know, and there was this tremendous light pouring into this dark space, which was my head. And what was really astounding to me was that I was actually seeing this. I wasn't imagining it. It wasn't meditative. I was seeing it. And through my crown, there was this tunnel of light, and I was sucked up into this tunnel of light, traveled up this tunnel of light, and at the end of this tunnel, there was this huge being of light, roughly outlined, you know, kind of humanoid type thing, but huge. And this being was just standing there with its arms spread. And this being said to me, "You asked for it." And
that
instant, just all of this light, it wasn't even light, it was love. It was literally the energy of love. And what we have here on this planet that we think of as love very often isn't. It's ego gratification. This was the frequency of love, and it was an energy I had never encountered before. And it was of an intensity that was overwhelming. I truly felt that if I stayed in that energy, I would cease to exist. And so I asked for it to stop, and it did instantly. And then I said, oh no, wait, come back. And I got slammed back down into my body, and all of the stones that were on me had flown around the room. Some of them had hit the walls and broken. Some of them had rolled off the table. There were a few that were left on the table around me, on the massage table. And I'm laying there panting, but what I was really feeling was a lot of pain. I felt like my entire body had been burned from the inside out. I felt like I'd been hit by lightning and had nowhere to put this experience. It was absolutely outside of every paradigm I had ever, you know, lived within. And then the person who was doing the healing came back into the room and said, what did you do to my stones? You know, obviously she wasn't very happy because she felt like I'd maybe had a hissy fit and thrown her stones all over or whatever. I tried to explain what happened, and she just didn't get it.
Now, what were done with the stones, though? They were...
Do you mean the ones that were...
Yeah. Yeah, that you...
Around
that,
the room?
Yeah, around you.
Yeah, well, she took them all off and then, you know, got me up off the table. I tried to explain what had happened, and then I left because she wasn't happy with me at all, you know, which I can understand, you know. That's it's a little upsetting to come in and see your stones all over the place, I guess.
Yeah.
But, probably wouldn't have happened had she been actually facilitating the session.
Yeah, exactly. But all that energy coming in, all that energy coming in.
Yeah, it was devastating, Michelle, on a lot of levels. Quite honestly, I went into a six-month suicidal depression. I did not want to be in this body. I did not want to be on the planet. I did not want to be alive. I wanted to be back in that energy. And I knew that that's the energy we go to when we leave this body, when we go, you know, to that next level. It is that frequency. It is the energy of the divine mind. And that energy is the energy of love. And that was a real illustration for me that God is love. And I spent the next several years, next 2.5 decades, really, trying to get back to that place, trying to get back to that energy.
Yeah.
And all of my work with crystals, with vibrational healing work, with meditative practices and technologies, all of that developed from, first of all, an attempt to get back to that energy, but secondly, a progressive unlocking of information that I really feel was downloaded during that experience. I feel that that light coming into my body was literally a download of information. And as I learned to expand my frequency, not just get higher, you also have to be grounded, so expand that energy, that it would progressively unlock and new bits of information would come to the surface. So I feel as though the Crystal Ally Cards being my first book, and that, you know, they've been out for about 15 years now, if not a hair more, that was not channeled so much as it was an unlocking of information that happened when I sat with these stones, which are electromagnetic oscillators. That's what crystals and minerals are. They vibrate with different frequency sets in the electromagnetic spectrum. And by using the physical law of resonance to engage that frequency, it unlocks certain knowing and certain references and certain feelings within our own self. So the process of the Crystal Ally Cards was a process of unlocking some of that information, and it's continued ever since then.
The one thing that I noted with the book is that, and the cards, that there's an energy. I mean, there's a lot of cards out there, and those that are longtime listener of Awakenings, I don't say what I don't mean or don't think. I'll just acknowledge. But you really do feel the energy, the vibration comes through the wording and the imagery of the cards. It's not just reading something and kind of understanding it. You can feel the vibrational component.
Yeah. And that really was the goal with the cards. It wasn't actually the whole idea of the cards. I had been working for a company that dealt in minerals and crystals as part of my process of being able to afford crystals and minerals. I had to, you know, it's like a junkie. You got to become a drug dealer. Well, I'm a crystal junkie, so I had to work for a crystal dealer and in order to be able to afford my fix. And when I was working there, I got a huge number of calls from people saying, well, what stone do I use for this? What stone do I use for that? What stone do I use for this? Wanting an answer prescriptively, right? Well, this stone is always used for such and such, or this stone is always used for that. And what I had learned is that, in fact, crystals and stones are not most effective when used prescriptively at all. They are most effective when you are able to choose a stone that vibrationally resonates with the issue that you're exploring or the imbalance that you're attempting to heal. And that may be a completely different stone for you than it would be for me. And so what I wanted to do is create a tool that would allow people to choose a stone for a certain issue without letting their head get in the way, you know, without going to a book and looking it up in the index, or, you know, just vibrationally choosing a stone. And the only way that I could think of to do that, and actually what was revealed to me in order to do that, was the Crystal Ally cards, which gave people 50 different fairly common stones. Some of them are a hair obscure, but fairly common. And by spreading those cards out, they could take their head, their ego, out of the process and just vibrationally choose the stone that was most aligned with whatever they were focusing on. So that was kind of the basis of the concept. And each of the cards has actual photographs of stones. Excuse me, I'm getting the hiccups. Integrated into each of the images, but they were done, you know, 15 years ago on a Mac.
Wow. Using a 3D program.
Yeah, it was a long process. It took me 3.5 years to do the art because I'd set it all up in this three-dimensional program, and then it would take 24 to 36 hours for it to render. And then every time I had to make a slight adjustment, I'd have to run it again. Now I could render these things in 30 seconds. Yeah. So it was a very long process. But each of those images actually contains a photograph of the stone used sometimes as a texture wrap around three-dimensional objects, sometimes as a more obvious photo of the stone. But each of them does have that vibrational hit because it contains, you know, a photo capture of the photons being emitted from that stone. So, yeah, thank you for that. But vibrationally, that's really what they were meant to be, was were tools that vibrated, you know, with the energy of the stone.
They do. They definitely do, and you get that this resonance. You get the feeling, you get the attunement, and not just by the reading and the words and cognitively, but also vibrationally, which, as we know, is so important. That brings us into one of the questions. We have a couple here from the chat and then also email. I also want to, at this time, let everyone know that if you do have questions and you want to call in, the number is 347-539-5122. And that, again, is 347-539-5122. And if you just press 1 on the keypad, I will be alerted that you have a question. And then if you have a question in the chat, if you would type in caps, that helps me see it just a little better. Gedi is asking, and you touched on this a little bit, Naisha, with your explanation just now, but she's saying that she's been listening to her intuition and that she tends to meditate holding labradorite, azurite, selenium, and quartz. And she's saying, why am I doing this? She says she's been feeling very drawn to hold them. I'm not sure if she said she put them on her chest. I'm not sure. But Debbie, if you want to retype that. Any thoughts?
Yeah, lots of thoughts. I'm just trying to think of how to keep it as concise as possible. Your intuition is so critical, because let's look for a moment at what intuition is, right? Your brain processes between 28 and 30 billion bits of information every single second. Right, 28 to 30 billion bits of information. You only process 5 to 9 bits of that on a conscious level. That's, you know, your fraction of consciousness is tiny, tiny. All of the rest of that information is still processed by your nervous system and your brain, just not consciously. So when we talk about intuition, what we're talking about is that other 28 billion bits of information that your brain has processed and is trying to prompt you from. Okay, so intuition is huge, especially when it comes to choosing stones. Taking your head out of the process, a very simple exercise, let's say, for instance, you have an issue in your life, one of the common ones, so a relationship problem. So what you do is you actually feel that problem within you emotionally. Just feel it. How does it make you feel? And then what you do is go to your stones or go to a stone store, and you try to allow yourself to be drawn to that stone that is calling your attention. what is really going on there is that nature is trying to find resonance between your energy and the energy of a stone that will be resonant with that issue or problem that you're dealing with. So when you're choosing stones intuitively, you are actually utilizing a much larger part of your energy systems and brain than if you try to choose them consciously based on what you've learned from reading books. So first of all, you know, always choose your stones intuitively, and then after you've chosen it, then you can go to books, mine included, and say, okay, well, what does this person have to say about this stone? That may give you a little bit of insight, or it may not. Secondly, what's happening here, why you want to hold them, Debbie, is because when you bring a crystal or stone into your electromagnetic field, now your electromagnetic field is commonly called your aura. It's generated primarily by the heart, goes out about 12 feet, and secondarily by the brain, which goes out about 4 feet. So as long as you bring a stone into your electromagnetic field within 4 feet of your body, that energy of that stone will resonantly oscillate with whatever in your body needs to come into balance. You don't have to put it on a particular chakra. You don't have to stick it in a certain area. You can if you want to, but you don't have to. And those frequencies will go into your nervous system, be transmitted to your brain, and your brain will then change your biochemistry, bring up emotions, bring up realizations and understanding of the deeper aspects of what's going on for you. Is that fairly clear? I know it's a lot of information.
I think that's great. And so she's putting in her chest and hands, and then she says, my intuition usually leads me, but brain has some trouble understanding why.
Yeah, the brain always wants to know why. The why does not matter. What matters, when you're talking about your hands and your chest, your hands you can think of as extensions of your heart because they're pretty intimately tied into your heart area, especially along the spine. So your heart, being your biggest electromagnetic sensor, your heart is actually the first part of your body that receives and interprets electromagnetic energy, which means vibration or frequency. So when you're placing stones around your heart, the actual effect in your body is much, much stronger than if you stick a stone on your third eye. So that's an important one to realize. Also, the heart is tied into that parasympathetic healing and repair system, whereas the brain, the third eye area in particular, is tied into the sympathetic nervous system, fight or flight. So when you use your heart as your sensor, you're going to be much more effective and have much stronger resonance with the stones than if you use your head. So don't worry about why. Why, honestly, will reveal itself if you're simply conscious and aware while you're holding the stones. Just listen to them like you would listen to a friend when a friend is talking. You know, see what comes up for feelings and emotions. See what comes up for maybe visions or colors or memories or thoughts. All of those will reveal clues as to what this stone is bringing into balance within you.
Mm. Now, Addie is asking in the chat that you don't really have certain stones or a stone store near. Is it possible to get online? What do you feel about that?
Yeah, you absolutely can. Quite honestly, any stone you get is going to trigger something within you. And I used to believe that, you know, certain stones were for certain people, period. But now understanding more about how crystals and stones actually vibrate and how humans interact with them, any stone can be useful in bringing up something within you for balancing, healing, or conscious expansion. Now, one of the problems that people often run into is thinking that stones carry negative energy. Stones don't carry negative energy. What happens is that you have difficult stuff within you. You have old experiences, old difficult emotions. And when you pick up a certain stone, it will vibrate those references within your nervous system and brain and will bring them to the surface. A lot of people perceive that as the stone being negative, when in fact it's the stone's energy bringing up your negative stuff to be cleared. One way that you can be sure that the stone you're receiving from an online dealer is clear is simply by either vocally toning over the stone when you receive it. You can run it under very cold or very hot water, not boiling water because that will crack some stones, but very hot water, that rapid contraction or expansion will release minute electrical pulses, which will help to clear the stone. Those are two very quick ways to clear a stone. Also, you can use, you know, crystal bowls or gongs or drums, anything that creates a loud sound. That will clear the stone and allow the stone to return to its base resonant frequency. Then if you bring that stone into your energy field and you have a so-called negative reaction to it, know that that's your stuff coming up to be cleared. You know, you don't just use stones that feel good. If we're really going to go into our healing, we need to use those stones that also bring up difficult stuff within us. So as long as you clear it when you get it, then yeah, you're fine buying from online dealers. What I would do is make sure you're buying from an online dealer who has references. Sometimes you can tell that, like on eBay, if they have, you know, tons of sales and lots of good comments, that's a good indicator it's someone you want to deal with. And, you know, anytime you're buying stones, prepare to take a hit now and then. Only about 1/10 of the people out there selling stones in the world are metaphysical. There are just a lot of plain old rock hounds and dealers and miners that are selling stuff too. So it's always better to approach buying your stones online as if you're a specimen collector as opposed to a metaphysical person. Otherwise, you're going to pay a lot more for it, quite honestly.
That's a very good point. And anyway, you by resonance, you're going to kind of like attract what you need, it sounds like, and also what you're saying by your intuition, letting yourself be drawn to the site that would be selling those stones.
Yeah, and I think that one thing that needs to be clarified here is different people have different psychic channels, and those three channels are the same as the learning styles in education. So you have visual, which is clairvoyance. Mm-hmm. That's where people maybe are attracted to a stone's color, or they see it sparkling out of the corner of their eye, or they're drawn to it visually. The second one is auditory, where people may hear the name of a stone in their head when they think about an issue. They may hear a certain sound when they come across the proper stone. That's clairaudience. And then the third channel is kinesthetic, and it's the most common. And this is the, it's called clairsentience. It's just knowing, feeling. So you may feel vibration, tingling, heat, or cold. You may feel a certain pull towards something. By identifying what your psychic learning style is, you're going to be much more effective in your intuition. And this is something a lot of people don't realize. They're waiting for a stone to speak to them, but they're not clairaudient. They're never going to hear that stone speaking to them. But they may just know what that stone is trying to communicate, or they may see a scene playing out in their head that describes what that stone's communicating. So when we talk about your intuition, first identify, are you visual, auditory, or kinesthetic? And second, when you're choosing a stone, tune into that channel. And that way you'll be sure that you're being drawn to the stone that is most aligned for you.
Good point. Yeah, that's so true. I've taught classes and people will receive something. One's getting a vision, the other one's hearing it, and they're saying, well, I didn't get a message because I didn't come through like Johnny's vision, you know? And it's like, yeah, but we're all so similar, but we are different. We are unique. You know, we do have our unique ways of processing and receiving.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I notice a lot is when people are trying to meditate or just learning to meditate, oftentimes they're expecting to see. They're expecting to visualize. They're expecting to get some sort of visual experience. And, you know, not very many people are actual visual learners. If you are not a visual learner, you're never going to be able to visualize. So don't worry about it. Just tune into that either kinesthetic or auditory feeling. All three of those are valid channels, and they're all equally powerful, but not if you ignore it because you're expecting to get something else.
right. Exactly. And it's so powerful what you're saying, that they're all valid. They're all valid.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to come in one way. Now, we have a question from Addy, I believe the name. Asking about stones for Reiki, anything that you could suggest for removing blockages or assisting in removing blockages, and then also anything that would assist in forgiveness?
Okay. There are no particular stones for Reiki. per se. Reiki is, you know, a process of using universal life energy in healing. Any stone can be engaged. As a practitioner or a healer, the most important thing that you can do is to focus on the energy of your client, literally sensing, again, either visually, kinesthetic, or auditorily, what that person needs, and choose the stones. Have the stones right there near their table and choose those stones that feel or that you see or that you hear are most aligned with that client. There is no one-size-fits-all block removal stone. There is no one-size-fits-all stone that is most aligned with Reiki or any other healing practice, quite honestly. The second part of that is for forgiveness. Again, the best way to deal with that, Addie, is to focus on what you feel you need to forgive and find that stone that most calls you. Now, I want to explain just a little bit about why this process is important, as opposed to just do it prescriptively, which is where you look up in a book and go, okay, this stone's good for forgiveness, that stone's good for forgiveness. Let's look at the concept of relationship problems. This was one I always used to get. People saying, oh, I'm having a problem in my marriage. What stone should I use? Well, what's the problem? Is it a communication problem? Is it a sexual problem? Is it a problem with you not vibrating at the same level as your partner any longer? Is it a problem of inequality in, you know, how you share chores? I mean, there could be so many different reasons why that relationship isn't working, and there could be 10 different stones for each one of those reasons. So we need to get out of this idea that we can prescriptively say, you know, this is the magic pill for that issue, and we need to instead learn how to trust ourselves and our own intuition to choose those stones that we are drawn to for certain issues. That's the only way you're really going to get an effective experience.
So true. I think that's an, you know, astrology, anything. We, you know, people love formulas, and you know, it seems a little quicker, you know, to have the recipe there. But I wholeheartedly agree with what you're saying, and have found it in my life to be true that it, a lot of times it is that just tuning in, and sometimes it doesn't even make, you know, logical sense. It, you know, it, again, like you said earlier, it's going out of that, the scope of that part of our thinking. It's going beyond thinking into, you know, intuiting and knowing. Might be a stone that has nothing to do with what you think it should be doing, but it works. You know, there's something there for you. So I think that's valid point.
Yeah. Good, because I do too. Yeah. It's really a foundation, you know, in how I teach about crystals. And actually, I mean, the Book of Stones that I wrote with Robert Simmons, that is an encyclopedia of gemstones and their properties. And I really had issues with writing that book, quite honestly. The reason that I agreed to write the book was because originally we were going to have five or six different authors all contributing their viewpoint about a certain stone. And I said, oh, that's great, because then
that is a great idea.
You know, that there's not just one thing that the stone does. And unfortunately, the publisher ended up just using Robert's information and my information. It didn't end up being that project. So in fact, I ended up writing a book, which is still useful. It's good for people to be able to reference things and get other points of view. However, it is much more important for people to learn to trust their own intuition. If you don't, you're dismissing a huge amount of your spiritual knowledge and understanding. And I think one of the reasons that people like that prescriptive formulaic approach is because they don't have to then take responsibility, trust their intuition, and possibly have a difficult experience. If they, you know, go to a book and it says use this stone for this, and they do, and they get nothing from it, they can go, oh, well, that person doesn't know what they're talking about. They don't have to take responsibility for the actual experience. So, yeah, that's why it's so important to learn to trust yourself. And the only way you can do that is by actually developing relationships with stones. And this is another point I want to touch on, which is they're not our slaves. You know, they're not, hey, you come here and do this for me. They are tools that are also conscious. And the only way to effectively use stones is to spend time with them and develop a relationship with them, just like you would with anyone else that you are working in a partnership relationship with. So that's something that people need to realize, is that they're not magic talismans. You actually have to engage that energy. And that means meditating with the stones.
Yeah. I think, it's interesting. No, and when you were saying about the formulaic, I think the whole idea is, it's energy, time, focus, like you're saying, developing that relationship as well as it, that's what happens, developing intuitively, is it's going to be a process over time, getting to know that part of you. And if I'm hearing you correctly, that's the same thing with the crystals or the stones. It's getting to know them and them to know you. There's this bonding process coming going on.
It, absolutely. And if we look at that on just a vibrational level and not on a kind of woodgy-woodgy, airy-fairy level, if we just look at it on a physics level, what's happening there is that you are tuning the minerals in your body in resonance with the minerals in that stone, which then changes the way that your nervous system processes energy, which then changes the way that your brain functions, which then changes the biochemistry of your body. And that's how crystal healing work. It's not that crystals have some magical unknown energies. The energies that crystals carry are very known, and they're very concrete, and there are basic laws of physics that tell us how crystals and stones bring us to these places of healing and consciousness expansion. By knowing that, the best way for you to develop your relationship with the stones is to be in resonance with them, to literally, let's talk about a simple exercise that people can use just so that they can take away something that they can actually use. The best way to just begin working with a stone is to hold it in your non-dominant hand, which is the hand that you don't write with, and preferably your left hand, because your left hand is attached to the right side of your brain, which tends to be about relationship and spatial aspects and tends to be the receptive side of the brain. So you're holding that stone in your hand. You want to close your eyes and you want to just begin with your breath imagining that your hand is like a sponge, like an old dried sponge, and that there's an energy coming off of that stone that's like water. And just imagine or sense your hand absorbing that energy and breathe it all the way up your arm progressively and through your shoulder and then into your physical heart, because remember, your physical heart is your major energy processor. So you draw it up your arm and into your physical heart and then radiate it throughout your entire body and energy field. It's a very simple exercise, takes 10-15 minutes. You will get so much more of a hit from that experience than sticking the stone in your third eye or going on a guided journey with it. So that's just a very basic way to begin and a very effective way.
Mm. That's good to know. We had a question on that about, are you supposed to rub them?
No.
No. Okay. That was nice. Like,
The only benefit of rubbing a stone is that the friction that creates a little bit of heat, and that heat can stimulate the molecules in that stone. And that can, in some types of stones, specifically silicates, cause the stone to emit a minute electrical charge. But you can do the same thing just by warming the stone in your hand or running the stone under warm water, as long as it's not a water-soluble stone, which is important to know. And, you don't need to rub it or go through any type of real process with it. Just warm it gently between your hands for a minute or two before you use it in order to get it slightly stimulated.
Okay. And we had another question here for Grand Elf about programming stones. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Well, I have quite a few. And just to put it simply, clear quartz crystals are the most programmable of all stones because they don't contain any other minerals other than silicon and oxygen. And because of that purity, they are very easily programmable. Secondly, because in clear quartz crystals, the base units of that stone, the tiny internal crystals, they're all aligned with one another, are quite adaptable to a wide range of frequencies. So clear quartz crystals are the best to program. There is no such thing as a permanent program in a crystal. So don't bother going out there on the internet and buying these stones that are supposedly permanently programmed with whatever. That stone is an electromagnetic oscillator, and it will vibrate with whatever energy in the environment is loudest that it is able to move into resonance with. That could be the energy of your computer, it could be the energy of your television set, it could be your energy. So when you're programming a stone, you need to be loud with your energy, not just hold an intention, but actually imagine that you're amplifying the energy coming out of your heart and strongly feel what you want to create, not think about it. When you do that, the stone will warm up. You'll feel it sometimes getting quite hot. The program will be held as long as that stone's not exposed to a louder electromagnetic field and dependent upon how loud you were when you programmed it. Therefore, it's a good idea to program it regularly.
Well, it also, because it's, you know, live, it would shift, right, is my sense of it. The energetic properties and depending, like you're saying, what's in the environment or the person. Let me get to a couple of the email questions. One was, and you did mention this, which reminded me about the computers. A couple of questions were about having crystals near your computer or on your television to stave off either the frequencies that are emitted, and or this person is saying negative programs. So I'm not sure what they're meaning. If they're meaning on television programs, I'm not sure what. But yes, you can.
Well, either way, I do not recommend putting quartz crystals or silicates around your computer or television or any other electronic. The reason being, we know that quartz crystals can move into resonance easily with different electromagnetic frequencies. That's why they were used in crystal radios, for instance. They can easily move into resonance with microwave radiation. So by putting them on your computer, it amplifies it exactly.
That's
so
what I thought.
What we want to use around our computers and around our electronics are actually magnetically susceptible stones, specifically ferromagnetic stones, which would be stones like lodestone, which is a naturally magnetic iron ore, hematite, which is iron, is magnetically susceptible. It resonates more with a magnetic energy as opposed to electrical frequency. Even pyrite can be useful. That contains a lot of iron as well. And black tourmaline is the only silicate that I will use around my computers because black tourmaline also contains high amounts of iron and many other chemical elements that allow it to restructure energy. So, yes, I would use tourmaline or one of the iron-bearing stones around the CPU of my computer or around my television, but I would not put clear quartz or amethyst or rose quartz or any of those quartzes around those devices because they will amplify the energy more than they will mediate it.
And what about obsidian? We have someone in the chat saying, what about obsidian?
Obsidian is a silicate. It's volcanic glass, and it doesn't even really have a really coherent crystalline structure. So I would stick with something that is, as I said, ferromagnetic, because it's magnetic energy structures frequency. It regulates it. So anything that can vibrate with magnetic energy is going to help to structure energy. Yeah, obsidian wouldn't.
Okay. Because a lot of people use that stone for protection.
Yeah, well, historically and traditionally, it's been used for protection. I mean, it was used in weapons. It was used in tools. So just within the human psyche, you know, the concept is, yes, it's a protective stone. But when you're looking at the actual physics of dealing with microwave radiation off of electronics, it's a different principle that needs to be taken into account.
Yeah, because, well, it absorbs.
I would say that.
Question there. Does it absorb? Lenny's asking, does it absorb the energy?
Crystals don't absorb energy. The energy passes through the crystals, and the crystals will either resonate with it or they won't. So the idea of like a stone absorbing negative energy, it doesn't. It can't. That's not the way that oscillators work. What it can do is move into resonance with energies that hit us in a way that is negative. But simply by clearing that stone, it resets it to its base resonant frequency so that it's no longer vibrating with that. And it takes quite a loud energy field to shift a crystal. I'm not mm-hmm. all weird about people touching my stones, because I work with them pretty consciously and pretty loudly, and so it would take a big hit for somebody to come along and shift that stone into resonance with them. They'd have to be very intentional and very, very good at it. I'm not a believer that people can just accidentally, you know, put negative energy into a stone. In fact, I don't even believe in negative energy. I believe that all energy is neutral. It just hits us as negative or positive, depending on what we're carrying within our own energy systems.
Yeah, and then again, you're talking, if we're going into negative and positive, then we're back in the dual plane, you know.
Which is the linear process.
Thank you. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Every line has a beginning and an end. You know, it has a polarity.
Well,
when you go into that spherical living.
Yeah, I find what's happened is it's, and believe me, I've been there myself. You know, the old model was basically if anything that happened to you that you were uncomfortable with or you didn't like, then it was negative.
It was negative, right, exactly. And that doesn't work very well when you're trying to clear yourself. just looking at... you know, the concept of all of the stuff that you carry within you that you've experienced in your life that was unpleasant, if you want to clear that, it is important for you to recognize it and to reprogram it essentially by being more loud positively than that experience was negatively, if you want to put it in that language.
Yeah.
So, yeah, in order to really heal, you've got to use those stones or those tools that bring up your stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that's the only way you can see what's there so that you can then understand it and clear it and move beyond it.
The raw materia, you know, that prima materia, that raw material that... now, we did have a question. You kind of, you've really touched on this, but I want... what about when you do some emotional clearing and you're wearing stones? I always feel like they need to be cleared because I don't want to get that energy back to me. And I know people have said this about jewelry too. What is your thought of that? If somebody's doing clearing work or getting healing work, let's say they're wearing certain jewelry, does there need to be an attention put now to that those stones?
You know, I would clear any stone or piece of jewelry that is in your energy field when you have a loud energetic emotional release. And I don't mean loud as in, you know, vocally yelling or screaming. I mean when you feel an emotion, particularly one that's uncomfortable for you, very loudly, that is actually a frequency set that's emitted by your heart into your electromagnetic field, and it can be loud enough to cause the stone to move into resonance with it. Now, that in itself isn't a big deal. The stone doesn't care. It vibrates where it vibrates. It experiences all energy as neutral and just explores it. However, if you then, at a later date, put that stone back on your body in your electromagnetic field, it's possible it might be loud enough to recreate that experience. So, yes, mm-hmm. you want to clear those stones if you have any question. And the way to clear them, again, the easiest, quickest way is sound vibration. Tuning forks, drums, tinksha bells, crystal bowls, Tibetan bowls, toning, anything that emits a loud sound energy. You know, Led Zeppelin on your stereo. It doesn't matter what frequency it is.
Yeah.
It just matters that it is loud enough to break that resonant field so that the stone can return to its base resonant frequency.
That was the next. What about using rock salt or salt water, mm-hmm. leaving in the sunshine? I love the idea of the toning, though, because then you're going back to that.
Yeah. Well, the great thing about toning, local toning, is that it, number one, uses the laws of physics, which means it's simple, it's quick, it's easy, and it's effective. And there's not a lot of, you know, bells, feathers, bones, and burning things
That's right.
involved.
That's right.
And you can clear an entire table of stones with toning. You don't need to do every single one at a time. As long as that sound vibration is loud enough, it will shift the frequency. It will break the resonant field, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So when you tone, the other reason it's good is that you will notice your tone wants to change at a certain point, and that's when you know that the energy has shifted. So mm-hmm. it is kind of self-revealing when the stone has been cleared. A lot of the other practices of clearing stones, many of which I have used in the past, such as rock salt, sea salt, salt water, cold water, hot water, sitting in the sun, sitting in the moon, burying in the earth. Some of them can be effective according to the laws of physics, but all of them take a lot longer. All of them are much more cumbersome. And some of them, like putting your stones in the sunshine, can fade your stones over time. If you have any gas pockets or fluid or water in the stone, like an anhydro, and you place it in the sun and it gets too hot, it can crack and break. Some stones are water soluble. I had someone call me once and say, oh, my lepidolite ended. I left it in a bowl of water for a week and now it's gone. It's water soluble, and therefore it went into the water. So, you know, you need to be aware of this, that water will damage some stones. Excuse me. So, yes, you can use those methods. I will just say that the sound method is faster, easier, and more in alignment with basic physics principles that, you know, are aligned with how the stone works in the first place.
I've got another one here. Let's see. By Kathy. We've got one from Kathy and Gail. We're getting to you guys in the chat room. I guess everybody's comfy cozy in the chat room and not calling in, so that's fine. When you buy a person's, when you buy a stone from someone else, are you getting their energy?
Maybe, maybe not. It depends on if that person actually worked with that stone or if it was just in their environment, or if someone wore it continually. Then there is a possibility that that stone might still be in resonance with that person's energy, but it, again, just using simple sound vibration techniques, you can easily clear it and return the stone to its base resonant frequency. It won't permanently carry that person's energy, no.
Okay. And do all stones need to be cleared when you purchase them? From Gail.
I just to be on the safe side, I would. I know there are certain books out there that say, you know, citrine never needs to be cleared, or selenite never needs to be cleared, or kyanite never needs to be cleared. As long as a stone is capable of shifting into resonance with energies, which all stones are, they're electromagnetic oscillators, it's their job, it's what they do, they will need to be cleared. There's nothing that makes citrine any different from other forms of quartz in that respect. There's nothing that makes selenite any different in that respect. So I would, just to be on the safe side, clear all the stones when you receive them. Oftentimes metaphysical dealers will clear them before they're sent out, but if you know you're worried about it, go ahead and clear it yourself.
Okay. And then do you have a particular online source for buying stones?
It really depends on the stone that you want to get. There are over 4,000 different types of minerals. Most online dealers are going to deal in your basic Brazilian stones, rose quartz, clear quartz, amethyst, kyanites, you know, your basics, which is great and fine and a good place to start. As you get more savvy about the types of stones that you wish to purchase, what you're actually going to want to do is find different dealers for different things. One good way to do that is to subscribe to Lapidary Journal or Rock and Gem Magazine. Both of those have fabulous ads in the back, classified ads for dealers, many of whom have websites. And so that's a good way to find real dealers who are probably not metaphysical, but will know what they're talking about, will have good information, and will be honest with you about what they're selling.
Yeah, which you don't really need that. You mentioned, touched upon that earlier. You don't, need to go to a bookstore.
A metaphysical dealer. No,
yeah.
You really don't. And you will end up paying more generally.
A lot.
In those
settings.
I mean, if you even go to a rock and gem show and you walk up to somebody's booth and you pick up a crystal and go, oh, you know, this crystal is talking to me and it's really resonating with my third chakra, the dealer's going to be standing there going, ka-ching, Whereas if you just walk up and go, oh, that's an interesting specimen, how much? you just have to treat it like you would buying anything else. Recognize that not everybody out there is pie-eyed about this.
Yeah, that's true. When you go to the bazaar or the market and you're the person, I just saw something on buying a house, and then they know that you really want it, there it goes, emotional buy. Now Lynn is asking, this is interesting, I had not heard of this before. Naisha, what about feeding stone? She said, I've heard some feel this is necessary.
Yeah. Lynn, that completely depends on the belief system that you're coming from. The concept of feeding stones comes from certain New Age-ized Native American beliefs, and I don't even like to say Native Americans believe this and Native Americans believe that. That's like saying, you know, black people like watermelon. It's racist and it's a stereotype. However, there are some teachers out there who are teaching from a perspective of some Native American tribes that use stones, where the stones are fed cornmeal or they're fed you know, certain things. In my own shamanic practice, I do feed my elemental guardian stones. And that is completely a belief system based practice.
Yeah.
There is no reason to have to do it. And if it is not part of your belief system, there's no reason to do it. You know, it is not necessary to adopt a belief system that isn't part of your reality, because then it's not going to be effective anyway.
Anyway, yeah. And I was going to say, in my shamanic training and initiated in rock medicine, maybe it's different than stones, but we never didn't receive that kind of feeding of other things, or kind of having an energetic exchange that you're in care, you know, whether cleaning or through intention or being, but not that. But that's interesting. But I like also what you're saying about the belief system, that if you don't necessarily have to adopt it.
Yeah, and that's very true. I realized that long ago in shamanic training. You know, for instance, certain schools of shamanism use a dehydrated llama fetus as in the shamanic practice. I don't have dehydrated llama fetuses around my front yard. You know, it's not part of my culture. It's not part of my belief systems. It doesn't have the same meaning to me. Therefore, I wouldn't use that, because it's not representational of anything to me. And I think it's the same with using sage to clear. Sage is one of the four sacred medicines. If you're using sage and you're not using the other three sacred medicines, which are cedar, sweetgrass, and tobacco, you're not using sage appropriately, according to the belief system from which it originated. And it's belief system based. Therefore, if it's not inclusive of the belief system, it's not going to be effective. So I think we need to kind of get away from the idea of just adopting other people's belief systems in some hope that it will magically work for us, when it really has no bearing in our belief systems or our culture. Start where you are. Don't take on somebody else's cosmology just because you think it's going to, you know, be better than yours. And I think we can get around a lot of that by understanding more about the actual physics of crystals and stones.
And also, reminds me of what you were saying earlier about, you know, the discipline, the training, the understanding is again, when you ultimately, I think I look at it as, at one point, the seeker becomes the finder, becomes the beer. You know, you're just, you know, being. Perhaps when people are in that seeking mode, seeing, does this really fit with me? Is this really me, or do I have to? You know, it reminds me when I, you know, studied Hinduism, and I was in India, and they were seeing an ashram, and they kept saying you have to wear the sari, and I didn't. I said, you know what? I don't really like those.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
I'm not going to put
your...
them into, it's not my energy to do all that, you know, but, you know, I had to wear a long skirt. But maybe sometimes people too much, you know, want to adopt, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's the natural process, too, of learning discernment. There are six stages in spiritual growth, which I call the becoming the human crystal process. And just quickly, the first stage is the egg, which is where we're unaware. And then we crack open. That's where almost everybody listening here has certainly been. And that's when you become the pupa. And in that, or the larva, rather, in that stage of the larval stage, you consume everything. You take in all of the information, all the workshops, all the, you know, books. You take it all in, but there's no discernment there. And then you have the stage where you go into the pupa or into the cocoon. And that is when you stop taking in all of that information willy-nilly and start sorting through what you've collected and saying, you know, does this make sense to me? Is this really relevant to me? Is this something I need to pay attention to? Not is it right or wrong or good or bad, but is it related to me in any way? Is this, you know, related mm-hmm. to my path, what I wish to accomplish, what I wish to bring into the world? Or is it a distraction, or is it just entertainment? And not to say that entertainment is a bad thing, but, you know, as we said at the beginning of the show, there's finite amount of time right now. And the more you spend being distracted and entertained, the less you'll be able to spend focusing on getting things actually done. So that discernment stage is where we discard belief systems that are not our own, that we thought maybe would work for us but didn't end up working for us, et cetera. And then we go through the transformation, which is where everything in our life shifts, changes, and falls apart in order to be restructured. And then we have the emergence, where we come out of that cocoon and begin actually walking our path in the world. And then finally maturity, which is where we get to that place of being and recognizing that, you know, it's already too late, and everything we do on some level because of simultaneity has already been done. And yet we do it anyway because it's part of who we are. So,
This to me, Naisha gives a wonderful lead-in, because I do want to, in our remaining minutes, if you would, have you touch on your Chrysalis Institute for Personal and Planetary Transformation. If you can let the listeners know a little bit about what the Institute is about and as a resource.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the Chrysalis Institute is an educational institution that I started about 15 years ago, and initially began it as an information kind of clearinghouse, and it rapidly evolved into a training center where we train people in crystal resonance therapy, in Primus activation healing technique, in crystallic shamanism, in lots of different modalities for spiritual growth and also for facilitation of others in healing work. And yeah, so that's in a nutshell what it is. There's also the Chrysalis Institute Press, which is the publishing branch, which I use for creating meditation CDs and other CDs, and also the Infinite Abundance Program now has been published by Chrysalis Institute Press. So as far as a resource goes, it is specifically a resource for training in these different ideas about crystals and stones, but also on a larger level, vibrational healing, and on an even larger level, personal and spiritual development in general.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Now, we did have another question, and just because I'm putting something in the chat on it, but I'd love if you would actually touch upon this about the time frame, you know, that I think Addie is putting, why is there a limited period of time now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, one thing that I would refer everyone out there to, if you have any interest in the whole 2012 phenomenon and or the actual Mayan calendar, which is the more important aspect, would be Johann Kalman's book, The Mayan Calendar and the Transformation of Consciousness. And in that book, he outlines pretty convincingly how the Mayan calendar is a record of essentially the creative pulses of the universe. You can think of those as being emitted from, you know, creation. And these pulses accelerate. Each pulse is faster than the previous one. And we are getting close to the end of these pulses that were recorded. And that doesn't mean we then start a new cycle. It means we're then at the end of those pulses, and those pulses are now gone. Those pulses from that moment of creation have kind of passed by us, just like the ripples in a pond, you know, will eventually die out after that initial force creates them. So this idea of there being limited time is twofold. First of all, time itself is not going to be experienced in the same way, period. So we're the idea of linear time, that concept of linear time, and especially false time, which is what is measured by the Gregorian calendar, is going to come to an end. And second, this idea of these pulses of creative energy from the source are going to come to an end, and that is going to change the way that we create our reality. So literally, you know, there are a couple of deadlines looming, and this isn't a bad thing, a negative thing, or anything to be scared about. But it is important to recognize that the next couple of years are an important opportunity for us to gain mastery over this concept of surfing our lives and living spherically instead of linearly.
Mm. Yes, I've been receiving this too, and I'm glad that you said that. The idea of our concept of time changing and the calendar changing, you know, our whole way of living and being changing. And like we said earlier at the program, start surfing. You got to at least paddle in the water. You know, you got it.
Yeah. Yep, get on your board.
Get on your board. Yeah, get
hang
your
10.
Board. Exactly. Oh, Naisha, this has been wonderful. Absolutely an honor and a gift. I'm just really happy that you could take the time out of your full, fulfilled schedule to be on Awakenings and share with us. Thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you, Michelle. It was great fun.
Yeah, and those of you listening, if you would like more information, you can go to naisha.com. Also, thecrystallisinstitute.com, and of course, we've been speaking with Naisha Ozian. And until next time, continue to share your insight, shine your light, and keep awake. And if you'd like to be on the newsletter for Awakenings Radio, you can go to awakeningsradio@selfandlight.com. Thank you all for tuning in and listening. It's been an Awakening program.